Welcome in to First Things First. I'm Sarah Kustak, along with Chris Broussard and Doug Gottlieb. We're filling in for Jenna, Nick, and Chris. Good morning, guys. How are we doing?
Great.
Hump day?
Great. I'm excited.
We're feeling
Mike.
I'm excited about hump day. I love that commercial.
All right, we start with the continuing drama surrounding Antonio Brown. Reports are the Steelers will work on trading the star wide receiver. This came after AB met with Art Rooney, as documented on Instagram, where Brown says, "We both agreed it's time to move on, but I'll always have appreciation and gratitude towards the Rooney family and Steelers organization." Chris, how much should teams be willing to give up for Brown?
Well, let me say this. I think Antonio is overestimating the market for him and the value. He's not as far gone. He's not really far gone at all as far as his ability. But remember, Dez Bryant, you could not have told Dez Bryant that he would be out of the NFL. And so, you know, he obviously came back and got hurt. So I think Antonio, in a similar way, is overestimating his value and in being so excited and anxious to get out of Pittsburgh. That said, let's go back to Randy Moss when he was 30. What New England get him for? A fifth-round pick? T.O., when he was 31, Philadelphia got him for a fourth-round pick and a defensive end, a mediocre defensive end. So that shows you that Pittsburgh's hopes of getting a number one pick or first-round pick might be a little unrealistic, might be a pipe dream. All that said, depending on the team I am, if I'm New Orleans and I don't have a first-round, third-round, or fourth-round pick, I think I might be willing to give up my second-round pick for him, because with Drew Brees, Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas, I mean, that could be an electric offense, and they're in win-now mode. If I'm another team like a San Francisco, I'm probably thinking a third-round pick and maybe another player, maybe a Marquise Goodwin or somebody like that, a burner that you can send to Pittsburgh as a receiver. But I don't think I'm giving a first-rounder if I'm trying to get Antonio Brown.
I tend to agree with you. It's a little bit like playing spades, you know, where you're sitting there going, I got two of the possible, you know, maybe
you play
three
spades?
Yeah, I play
all right.
Spades.
I don't know. I got to admit, I don't know many non-blacks that play spades.
Oh, I play spades.
You do, too?
Yeah, we're all basketball players. Basketball players play spades.
All right.
So you guys are Midwest. You probably play
Euchre
as well. You didn't play Euchre, did you, growing up in the Midwest?
You know I won Dwayne Wade's spades tournament last year.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Who was your partner?
And my partner was Indian. He was fantastic. And I said the same thing to him. I said,
Indian dudes play spades?
He wanted to play with me. I said, I haven't met many non-blacks that play spades. He was like, trust me, I'm great. He was Jordan to my Pippen.
Did you guys table talk a lot? Or did you guys have signals?
He was like four steps ahead of me and everybody else.
All right, we'll break up the
table talk.
Break up the table talk for a second here. I do think we're bearing a little bit of the lead. Look, I love the idea of New Orleans. Okay, I love the idea of Green Bay. I love the idea of putting him with a strong quarterback and especially in New Orleans, a strong head coach who brings respect, who is a very good play caller. But you have to have everything in a row, because remember, we're showing the happy, happy, joy, joy photo at the end of the day. We kind of blew past the fact that earlier in the day, he's on the treadmill huffing and puffing, talking about he wants to get paid, right? He's got to get paid. Is he going to show up on time? Is he going to show up, you know, when things aren't going well? Is he going to show up for a team that's trying to get into the playoffs? Like, there's some things that he violated in terms of football code that I don't believe you can violate. I think yesterday was the first day in which he finally came clean to what this is all about. It's all about getting paid.
Right.
It's all about a new contract. And I think he hurt his value with all these other things. So it's going to depend. It's going to depend on who the team is, and do they have a quarterback who's solidified with his position? Can he work with AB? Can the head coach work with AB? Do they have a plan in place for when AB goes off the reservation? And then, how much money does he want? He clearly wants a new contract. He was set to make 15, I think, on a non-guaranteed deal. And then, you know, the Steelers aren't exactly in a point of strength here, because they're going to take a huge pay. They're going to take a huge cap hit. The one difference, there's a couple differences with Dez Bryant. One, Dez's production had waned.
Yeah, he's much
better. And Dez was never seen as the type of elite route runner as this guy is. Like, look, I'll tell you, I think Antonio Brown has butchered this thing. six ways but sideways, or whatever the expression is. But I think he's a way better wide receiver at this stage in his career than Dez Bryant at the same stage in his career last year. Additionally, the Cowboys kind of did Dez dirty a little bit in holding on to him longer so that the market had already settled. This is before the market settles. I think that increases his value. Probably a third-round pick, but there are teams that will overpay, you know? And the issue with the Saints is they overpaid for Teddy Bridgewater with that third-round pick, because a third-round pick would probably be a little bit high in terms of the ask.
I look at Indianapolis, too. That's a team that obviously you got a strong quarterback who I think could handle AB, and they've got plenty of cap room where, look, I'd be hesitant to give this guy a deal, but, you know, I'd guarantee him maybe a couple years, you know, and see what his production is. He looks like, on the field, a young 30, or I think he'll be 31 by the time the season starts. He still looks young. He works hard, and it depends. I mean, Randy Moss was pretty much done by 32, 33. But other guys, T.O. was really good still at 35. Jerry Rice went longer than that.
Steve Smith is a guy. He's not a guy. He hasn't sustained injuries, you know? So it's not like Dez was never a great route runner. And then Dez had the foot problem that had kept him out. And Dez had taken a pounding as well. And Dez had always played on artificial turf, where he hasn't. He's played on natural grass, which I think there's it a makes little bit of difference.
Then how much is this about some of the off-the-field issues? Of the
like, well, it's
is
a lot.
That,
there's
that the percentage of concern that you would have if you were another team?
Yeah, more. I'm not really concerned.
And I think what he's going to perform like on the field.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about his performance on the field. I'm concerned about his off-the-field issues and if his off-the-field issues could impact his performance on the field. If he's not happy. I mean, why didn't he play in game week 17?
He played 15 games. They threw him the ball 168 times. Like, what the hell are you unhappy about, dude? You know, right?
Yeah, I mean, immature.
I understand some of it, I guess, from his side has always been, hey, we're not holding Big Ben and other people accountable in practice, and he is a hard worker. But it is the pot calling the kettle when he had the Facebook in the locker room, and he has other things that he does. But it's a great point you bring up, Sarah. Like, what are you unhappy about, dude? They threw to you 168 times. Yeah. That if he plays in the game against the Bengals, he would have had 180 or so targets for a season, which is all wide receivers want. Just give me the ball, and I'll do the rest. So pleasing him contractually, pleasing him on Sundays, can be just tiresome. And then it's, how much do we have to pay you? How much do we have? Does it have to be 2 years of guaranteed money, 3 years of guaranteed money? Do we know if you're going to show up? I think all of this hurts his value. And then there's the other side to it, which is the Steelers are going to take a pronounced hit in the cap, not in real money, but in cap money. And they have to somehow navigate that with what they want to take back in return.
Well, all that you said, that's why I wouldn't send him to a young team. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo, I guess you can call him young. I think he could handle AB. But in Arizona with the Josh Rosen, a New York Jets with the Sam Darnold, I wouldn't want him with those quarterbacks, because I think he tried to overwhelm them and force them to throw him the ball. I just think he'd be a problem. I think we also haven't talked about, you know, remember Ryan Clark, his former teammate, has called him out as being selfish, only concerned about himself. A lot of this, I think the money is critical, as you said, him wanting the guaranteed money. Ben Roethlisberger, I think that relationship. But also, remember, when did this kind of start? It wasn't when Ben called him out. I think that was week 12 or something like that, for the poor route he ran, according to Ben. It was when Juju Smith-Schuster was named offensive MVP. And I think that speaks to a lot of what AB's concerned about, is getting mine and being the man. And so I think that's a problem, too.
Money aside, should the Steelers at all be concerned about their depth at that position, or who they have, or Juju Smith-Schuster being the focal point of what they're doing off it? Is there anything else that they're going to need to do to fortify
that position? They're going to have to get another wide receiver, and you're replacing a guy who's an elite-level talent and a great route runner. And, you know, it changes how the whole field looks, because there's going to be a safety over the top. Every time you put 84 out wide, you better put a safety out there. Otherwise, he's going to light you up. And Ben could still throw to him. Like, look, I don't want in any way, and I think you feel the same, an indictment of Antonio Brown's talent or his skill. Right. And he's a refined wide receiver. He's not just a freak athlete. He's a refined wide receiver. So it does change them. But there's a lot of similarities with this situation to what they dealt with at running back last year, where Le'Veon Bell is a freak talent. He is a great, great talent, and he is in his prime. But they found a way to get a running back who cost them less money, who was in it for the team, and the guys kind of rallied behind. I think they can have the same effect. And the fact that it happens now, before the draft, before free agency, still gives them a ton of time to fill in with a guy or two. James Washington's there. He's an Oklahoma State guy. I don't think he's that level of talent. I think they'll have to draft one and probably sign one as well. They'll probably have to do it by committee.
And look, this is what they do. Santonio Holmes, Plaxico Burress, Michael Wallace. When Wallace was gone, that opened the door for AB. So I think Juju Smith-Schuster will be the next guy, and maybe they get somebody in a trade or they draft somebody or James Washington pans out.
We'll keep digging into this later. Coming up, could Kyler Murray be tanking his own draft stock? That's next on FS1. And you can always check us out on Fox Sports Channel on Sirius XM. We'll be right back. Here's a quick and free way to finally stick to your New Year's resolutions. Start listening to podcasts on Spotify. With more than 150,000 podcasts, including many of the world's most popular self-improvement shows, you can learn how to balance a budget, balance your diet, and even learn how to feel balanced while meditating. All podcasts on Spotify are free, and you can download episodes for those times when you've gone off the grid, you know, to get all that newfound balance back into your life. So start the year off right and start listening to podcasts on Spotify.
We'll get to Kyler Murray in a second, but first, Justin James drives the basket. Delivers. Woo-hoo! One-handed throwdown.
That's nice. That's nicer than that Wisconsin dunk we highlighted.
Literally the only highlight to Wyoming's season this year. They have had a tough year.
That's all right.
He got up. That's some explosion.
Fennis Dembo, most famous Wyoming Cowboy.
That's the only Wyoming Cowboy I know.
More college basketball. South Carolina's A.J. Lawson.
Okay.
South Carolina's had an incredible season. They started out crummy, and now they're like, I think, 9-4 in SEC play. Frank Martin's doing a great job, and this is a ferocious. I look like Sarah back when she played DePaul.
Yeah, that was pretty much
She had putbacks like
Pops.
Big on the boards.
Finally, Liberty. Right fielder Aiden Carriker flips over the fence, and he makes the catch.
Oh, that's nice.
Look at that.
That is nice.
And he avoids the rocks. Look, what avoids the rocks.
I'm glad he didn't land on his head and break his neck.
Yeah, that could have been ugly.
Wow.
I think his parents are also very happy he didn't land on his head and break his neck. Probably wouldn't have made the show.
No. Good call. Moving on, Kyler Murray. He's been the talk of the NFL draft since declaring he was committed to football last week. However, he said yesterday he's unsure whether or not he will throw with a combine next week. Doug, would Kyler Murray be making a mistake not throwing at the combine?
I don't think he'd be making a mistake. This sounds like I'm talking in circles, so stop me if I'm contradicting myself. I don't think it would be a mistake, but I do think it would be a smart thing to do for him to throw. Okay, remember, the more you see him, the more you get it, right? First, I would run. I mean, Baker Mayfield told me he's going to run a 4-2. Now, I don't know if he's going to run.
He's saying he'll run, right?
Yeah,
he's,
that's not he's kind of noncommittal about exactly what he's going to do.
And he just said he's going to.
But the assumption is that he's going to run. And if you can run a 4-2 or a 4-3 and you're a quarterback and a Heisman Trophy winner, well, damn it, run a 4-2 and a 4-3.
Right.
Because there'll be somebody that sit there and goes like, well, I've never seen that before. I want that. Additionally, he's a really good thrower of the football. Now, there are some throws that people think he will struggle to make, you know, whether it's inside the numbers or he'll have to find seams within the offensive line. But guess what? There's no offensive line to throw over or to look through when you're throwing on air. I know that we're in this era in which, well, you got to have your special workouts and know all the timing and know the wide receivers. This guy's a baller. Okay, he was a baller in high school. He never lost a high school game in which he started. He was a baller in college. After leaving A&M, he goes to OU. He starts 1 year. He sets the world on fire. If you're a baller, go out and play. There's nothing wrong with his technique. He's got great feet. He's got great speed. Go and throw. So I don't think it's a negative if he doesn't, because so many others in that same situation have passed. But I see only a net positive if he does throw on air at the combine.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think it'd be fine if he throws. I have no problem whatsoever with him not throwing, because I think he'd do well, but we already know he can throw. And like you said, maybe they question a few throws, but doing it against air is not going to convince everybody you can make those throws. You got to do it in game action for them to really believe you can make it. So I don't think he has a ton to gain. I would run. Without question, I would run if I'm him. Even if he only runs a 4.4, that's fine. But I'm fine with him not throwing, as you said, Cam Newton, Jared Goff. A lot of these guys did not throw. The questions, for the most part, about Kyler Murray have nothing to do with his arm. We know he's got a dynamic arm. We know he can throw from the pocket. We know he's accurate. He can do all that stuff, so I don't think that's the issue. The issues are his size, like you mentioned yesterday, his hand size, yeah. Things like that. Nothing he's going to do throwing the football.
There are some questions about his arm. Like, he's a thrower.
Not the strength.
But, yeah, a little bit in terms of, like, I've heard, again, Doug Flutie with Mike Vick's athleticism, and Doug Flutie, also small, but also didn't have a cannon back there. He's not Russell Wilson. Like, Russell Wilson, an extra level of zip on the football. Here's one thing that's missed in the discussion about Kyler Murray. And I like Kyler. We discussed yesterday way more than Lamar Jackson. And Lamar Jackson last year at the Combine really struggled at the whiteboard, just struggled verbally in terms of his level of acumen and preparedness for sitting in front of GMs. Kyler's not that far down, but the difference between him and Baker, he's a better athlete than Baker. He's obviously faster, probably has better feet within the pocket. He's comfortable in the pocket, and he might even throw as good a ball as Baker, although Baker has a pretty high-level right. arm. The one thing that we are missing that hasn't been discussed is Baker has this leadership quality that I think people have begun to see during his time in Cleveland. And, yeah, he does some things where other guys would get roasted for it, but it makes everybody want to play for him. Like, when he was at Oak, like, dudes love him. And he's a verbal leader. He's a leader at the practice field. He's a leader in the media. He'll take all the bullets from any negativity. And that's not who Kyler is. Again, Kyler's a great competitor. It might be a better football player. But one of the things that pushed Baker over the top with the Cleveland Browns and with other teams that were evaluating him, because he's not the athlete of Kyler Murray, is Phil Simms says, well, he's a quarterback. He takes over a room when he walks in it, and that's not who Kyler Murray is. I think that's the biggest challenge. Well, that's the biggest challenge of the combine.
Kyler's a different personality.
Yes.
Doesn't mean he's not a leader. Russell Wilson is a whole different. Now, I'm not saying he's Russell Wilson. There were no questions about Russell Wilson's leadership. But Kyler is very strong character, very solid character. I think he can be a leader of men. That's what you want among a quarterback. Now, you're right. Baker does it in a whole different way.
Yes.
With his bravado and guys get in line. I mean, some of those similarities to when people compared him to Johnny Manziel. Manziel has a similar personality in terms of the bravado and all stuff. He had the off-the-field issues.
But
Baker, a lot of things Baker does, grabbing his crotch, all that, that's not cool. But it's some guys buy into that, talking junk about Hugh Jackson. How cool is that? But some guys buy into that. I'm just saying, even though Kyler's a different personality, don't take that to mean he can't be a leader, because there are many different types of leaders.
Are there better ways, though, he could show in those personal meetings? Are there ways that Kyler can prepare for those to showcase the type of leader he is or the type of personality that he has?
Absolutely. The difference in Manziel, though, like, look, Manziel was kind of always about Manziel. Okay, whereas
you don't think Baker's about Baker?
No, it's just not how. Like, I know people at Oklahoma, and they were all like, "You don't understand. This everybody loves this guy. Everybody's all in on Baker." Whereas Manziel was at A&M, it was, he's Johnny Goodtime. Everybody liked him, but he still kind of had roll with his own crew. Didn't roll necessarily with the football dudes. Like, just everywhere Baker's been, the guys like him. He just has this, and that's. Almost all of these quarterbacks, and obviously they don't have Matt Ryan doesn't have the personality of a Baker Mayfield, but you were at the Super Bowl with your radio show. I was as well. When you meet the quarterbacks, there's something different about them. Like, it's almost like politicians, where you meet them in person, you're like, I don't even like your politics, but I like you. I like you now. Matt Ryan sits next to you, you're like, I like him. Aaron Rodgers sits next to him.
Didn't you like Kyler?
I like Kyler, but he did come across a little bit quieter and not as big a personality. Not as relatable. There's also one other thing, which
I don't know about relatable.
Not everyone relates with you, Doug.
Well, no.
And I don't know that everybody relates with Baker Mayfield. Again, it's different personalities. Everybody doesn't relate, as we know, with Russell Wilson. But he's a leader.
No, there's no question about that.
Yeah,
yes, but Russell also can kind of take over a room. It is fascinating that Baker and Kyler, like, look, Kyler, his dad played at A&M. He goes to A&M, starts as a freshman, loses his job. Now, it's different than being a walk-on, but the eerie similarities between losing your job, Baker lost his job to injury when he was at Tech, but losing your job at one school in Texas and then coming up to Oklahoma and both setting the world on fire, there's similarities there, and they'll forever be compared. There's one other issue with Kyler, which is going to come up, is that his dad has a little LeVar Ball to him, and he's going to have to answer some questions about, hey, man, listen, we can't have your dad. Yeah. That's not how we roll in the NFL. So I think there's some personality stuff that he's going to have to answer, but if I'm him throwing a football, running, I do everything because that guy's a really good football player, and he has jaw-dropping athleticism.
Sounds good. All right, we're going to switch back to the hardwood. Coming up, why is tonight's UNC-Duke matchup being compared to the Super Bowl? That's next on First Things First. The NASCAR season heats up Sunday in Atlanta. It's the Folds of Honor Quick Trip 500, Sunday at 2 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Time for us to go viral. The PGA Tour is now allowing players to wear shorts during practice rounds and pro-ams, and no one is more excited than Phil Mickelson, who finally gets to show off those sculpted, glorious calves. Look at those.
Those are some impressive.
Those are I wouldn't expect that.
Well, the curtains don't match the drapes. Like, he's got the man boobs right up top and then those calves down low.
What was that commercial he did? Was he dancing?
Yes.
Was he doing high kicks?
Yes.
Was that
strong,
involving the
lower
calves?
Body.
Yes. Yeah, somebody's been doing calf
races. Is that a requirement for golfing? Does that help your swing, your pivot?
They don't need to get any bigger. Let's just put it that way.
Good-looking calves.
Stop working them out.
Good-looking calves.
Time for stories to start your morning. Big news in baseball. The Padres signed 26-year-old four-time All-Star Manny Machado to a 10-year, $300 million deal. Doug, do you like the deal for the Padres?
For the Padres? No. Johnny Hustle, a guy who they couldn't wait to get rid of in L.A., even though they needed a shortstop with Corey Sager on the DL with Tommy John surgery? No, for the Padres, I don't. I understand it. The Padres have always been a year away from being a year away, and we've heard for years they got the best farm system in baseball. And so last year they got Hosmer, paid a bunch of money for Hosmer because he's a leader. Now they get the talent in Machado, and the thought is he comes into his prime. He welcomes in all these young guys, but I don't know. You give a guy who struggles with hustling down the line 10 years, $300 million, in a kickback city like America's Finest City in San Diego, something tells me they're going to regret this in 5 or 6 years when it becomes an Albert Pujols type of deal.
I don't think it'll become an Albert Pujols type deal because Manny's only 26 and he's still got many years left. You know, Pujols was older, I think 32 when he signed that deal. So you knew the second half of that deal. It happened a little earlier than we expected with Pujols. But look, it's not going to lead to wins. I think they say they're going to win two more games after this signing. But in baseball, you look at it a little differently because they can sign Machado and Bryce Harper, and it doesn't mean they're going to win. Bryce Harper was great in Washington. They never really won anything there. So baseball is a little different. It makes them sexier. It can convince some other free agents that, hey, we're trying to win. Like you said, we're tired of hearing about the great farm system. Put something on the major league field so you can win. This is a step in that direction. So I get it. I don't think it's going to make them a great team, but I think it'll put some fans in the stands. It is a business, and it'll send a message to other guys that, hey, we're back in the major leagues and trying to win.
Yeah, look, he's a very good two-way player. I don't think he's a top five player in sport, but it's a huge contract, boy.
To the NBA, James Harden has scored 30 or more points in 31 straight games. However, he says the scoring streak is something he has had to do, and he's aware of the criticism of his style of play. Chris, is this criticism fair?
Well, I think, look, Kobe Bryant is one who said you're not going to win a championship that way. I agree with Kobe. I don't agree. Steven Jackson said it doesn't look like he's trying to win. I don't agree with that. I also don't agree that it's ugly basketball. I got to admit, I like watching James Harden. I know a lot of people don't. I just understand how difficult it is to come down every possession and just dribble and shake somebody up one-on-one and create a shot or create a shot for your teammate every time down. So I like watching what James Harden is doing. So, yeah, I think the criticism is a little unfair. I think he's had to do it initially when Chris Paul was out, Clint Capella was out, Eric Gordon was even out for a while. Now that Chris is back, Capella's about to be back, I don't think they need to do it. And they've gone 4-4 since Chris Paul's been back. Why? Because they're still caught up in the all James all the time, and Chris is becoming a role player. They have to work that out now.
There's a bunch to unpack. Let's start with, you're lying if you say you love watching James Harden.
I like watching it.
Dribble. I'm not saying
it's not. I like watching it.
We all love basketball. We all think James Harden's great at basketball. We all understand how hard it is to score. But it's really hard to get me to watch James Harden. I don't enjoy it. I understand.
Like an A1 tape.
I understand the philosophy.
I'm so impressed by what he's doing.
Well, here's the other part
to it. That is difficult.
Carrying a team is. But when you leave him in, you're up 20 or you're down 20, and he's clearly trying to extend the streak. I had to do it.
And far between.
Whatever. It obviously means the streak is important.
Most of these games they've had to win. Well, the streak should be. But you know, Doug, Michael Jordan said, I want to win, but I want to be the reason we win. Like, guys want their numbers. Guys want their stats and accolades. There's nothing wrong with that.
I understand. It's a longer discussion, but I don't believe you actually like watching James Harden dribble 15 times before making a move.
I like watching it. We'll have
more on this later. Moving on to the big matchup in college basketball. Number 8 UNC against number 1 Duke. The ticket to this game nearing Super Bowl prices in large part because of Zion Williamson. UNC head coach Roy Williams added, Zion is a different bird. Doug, what are expectations for Zion in his first game against North Carolina?
Obviously that he's going to get a steal and he's going to do a dunk that everybody goes like, wow, he's going to win the dunk contest and we're going to stop and hand him the basketball afterwards. First of all, this is great for a sport that has lacked a ton of buzz. You know, I mean, look, we got better games on Fox Sports 1 and Fox than we've ever had. And I think there's an incredible diverse set of coaches throughout the country and styles. But let's be honest, college basketball is kind of dying a slow death in terms of relevance and importance.
Regular season.
For a myriad of reasons. The regular season, you know, whether it's the conferences expanding, the lack of some of these rivalries, all the one-and-dones, all the transfers, what he plays where. It's just the Pac-12.
Don't you also think oversaturation?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's on every day. You're searching for a game, and there's a game on every night, and nothing's important. The one kind of throwback to how it used to be is Duke, Carolina, is Cameron Indoor. Is it because Zion is that much of a thing? Yes. It's also because you're in a tiny bandbox of a place, and it's the best rivalry, arguably in sports, going right now. So it's a confluence of things that have brought it together. My expectations, he's going to be spectacular in the way that Zion is spectacular, where he doesn't need the ball like James Harden every time down. He's not even their go-to guy, and yet he finds a way to take over a game at both ends of the floor. He's spectacular to watch, and I can't wait to see him tonight.
Look, I think you made some great points, and I do think UNC Duke is still special. But if Zion was not in this game, it'd be, okay, let's check it out because it's UNC Duke, it's the rivalry, but it wouldn't have this buzz. I mean, this guy is electric. And what else should I expect? I expect him to have a spectacular performance. I think Duke will win. UNC is tough, but Duke, what they've lost to one top-ranked team all season, it was Gonzaga earlier. They played well, recently beat Virginia twice. So I think Duke will pull it out, but we all want to see something special from Zion. And I mean, I haven't watched a game this season where he hasn't delivered something.
We talked a little bit about Kyler Murray, right? He has the magnetic thing that the stars have. When he comes out in the court, just his sneakers squeak differently than everybody else. And it's fun to watch. I love the way he competes at the defensive end. That was what's lacking from last year's Duke team that had Marvin Bagley and all those other stars. This one competes, and they compete because in college basketball, I think it's the same in the NBA, you are what your best player is, right? And when your best player is your toughest guy, when your best player is the guy that competes at both ends, that tracks you down and tries to block every shot, that's what your team is. So as R.J. Barrett is a spectacular talent, may actually be a more talented basketball player at the next level, but he's not the leader of this team. Right. The most impressive part about Zion is not the fact that he's lost some weight and trimmed up. It's not the fact that he's become a little bit better shooter than his reputation. It's the fact that he plays really, really hard and has become the unquestioned leader of the Duke
Blue Devils. This game, though, has 6 of the projected top 25 draft picks for next year.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. All right, back to the NFL. Many have speculated the Super Bowl was Rob Gronkowski's last game. His agent, Drew Rosenhaus, believes Gronk's retirement decision will come in the next couple of weeks. Gronk has been seen spending time at Gillette Stadium this offseason. Chris, should Gronk retire?
I mean, look, that's a personal decision. He obviously played well in the Super Bowl. He was key in that last drive. And really, the playoffs in general. I mean, he played well. It looked like he was not even half of the old Gronk during the regular season. And then he comes out and plays terrifically during the playoffs. We've seen him in all these videos with Tom Brady talking about, we're still here, we're not going anywhere. And that kind of makes you think, you know, maybe Gronk will stay around. But if his body is betraying him, he's always had problems with staying healthy. And now I'm sure it's much worse. I would love to see him come back and play and see them try to go for another Super Bowl. But I think looking at his body, and look, his agent obviously knows what's going on, so I do expect him to retire.
I think he's going to come back, and I think that Rob Gronkowski proved he's the greatest tight end of all time with his performance in the playoffs. Let me tell you why. So I grew up around Tony Gonzalez. He's my AAU teammate. He's our teammate here at Fox. He was recently inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And he's the greatest pass-catching tight end of all time. If you ask people in the sport, they'll say, look, the problem with these new tight ends is they don't block at all. So you literally, everyone knows you're not running to that side if you're just hoping and praying that they don't actually have to block. And the thing about Gronk, yes, he's always been a mismatch, especially in the red zone. Yes, he's always commanded a double team. But there's been other guys like that. It's the fact that he has been willing and able to block, and that's what he did in the playoffs. They became a power-running team, and they actually ran behind Rob Gronkowski. And I think there's this thought that he can evolve, much like Larry Fitzgerald, right, where the greatness of Larry Fitzgerald wasn't just when the Cardinals made the Super Bowl with Kurt Warner that you could just throw it up to him, two guys around him, he made every catch. It's that Larry Fitzgerald would sacrifice his ego now at this point in his career, move into the slot and kind of become almost like a Hines Ward, where he's willing to block, he's willing to run underneath, he's willing to do the things that don't get the glory that the guys outside the numbers get. That's the same for Gronk, where he's willing to block, he's willing to lead a power running game, and then occasionally split him out wide when he's got a little safety on it, throw it up to him. My guess would be the reason he's been around Gillette Stadium is he's trying to figure out how his body responds. Right. Because he's been through enough surgeries, he's been through enough injuries, he's trying to see, all right, I got the forearm thing, I've hurt my knee, I've hurt my back. Let me see how I feel after a couple weeks of working out, because if my body just doesn't respond, if I can't get it ready, then, yeah, I'll call it quits. And if he does so, in 5 years, he'll be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But I'm guessing he wants to play, and the guys that retire are the ones who mentally, they get that off switch, they have to go to a beach, and they don't want to play, and they get dragged back in. I don't think that's who Gronk is. I think he wants to play football, and I think he'll do it another year.
Great points about his blocking. That was hugely impressive in the playoffs. I will say this, though. It's easier to do that when you know, okay, this is a month. We got three games left in the playoffs. I'm going all out and blocking. We're trying to win. Or even if you're thinking, this may be my last go-round. Is he willing to say he plays two more years, or even a whole season? Is he willing to do that for an entire season? I'm not saying he was a terrible blocker.
No.
But you know what I mean?
It's a
big difference in saying, okay, this is who I am now. I'm going to be a blocker and catch the ball occasionally.
And I think that's all part of the genius to Bill Belichick, right? It's like Bill Belichick's going to go out. He searched last year. It wasn't for lack of trying. He searched. They brought in 6-7 guys to try and be that outside-the-numbers wide receiver to help Tom Brady. He's going to find a wide receiver for Tom Brady. But he's also going to find another tight end or two to go along with Rob Gronkowski to take away some of that load so he's not constantly having to be in there and play as many snaps. I think he's going to try and lighten the load if they want to hold on to him, right. And I think they do. I think Belichick's not an idiot, right? And even in the NFL where you're better off getting rid of a guy too early than too late, the one guy he hasn't done it with is Gronk, and he obviously hasn't been able to do it with Tom Brady, and I think he's reaped the rewards of keeping those guys a little bit longer than he would any other position.
Doug, you mentioned the Hall of Fame. He's played 9 seasons. Some of it has been injury-plagued. Is there a question, Chris, in your mind that he's going to be a Hall of Famer?
Not at all. In fact, when I saw this question, I was like, oh, Doug must doubt that he's a Hall of Famer. Because I think it's obvious. Like, now, I don't buy into him being the greatest tight end of all time. I like Tony Gonzalez. I like Kellen Winslow. You know, maybe there's a few others you might throw in there, but there's always been that talk that kind of Gronk is the greatest tight end ever. I've never bought into that, but without question, he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, he is the second most recognizable player on the second half of the greatest NFL dynasty in history. You know, he was huge in this Super Bowl win. We know they won the other one without him. But his first Super Bowl, he played well, too. Caught a touchdown pass. And so, No question. I mean, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer easily.
Do you think he would have been as impactful in his career if he was not playing in New England?
It's an impossible question, yeah, right? I mean, it's impossible. I have no idea. But the answer is probably no, but I can't tell you that for a fact. Look, there's a lot of things about the New England dynasty that we get caught up in Spygate and Deflategate and whether or not Marshawn Lynch should have gotten the football that we actually miss. Here's one. We're actually robbed of the prime or the best year of this dynasty. In that they were 18-0, right. Lost to the Giants, and then Tom Brady got hurt the next year with the same team. Like we sometimes forget the best football team the Patriots ever had didn't win a Super Bowl. Here's how good that team was. The margin of victory this year in terms of total points, the greatest one in the NFL this season was the Rams, plus 144. Right? Take a wild guess what the Patriots were when they went undefeated in the regular season. Plus 315. They outscored their opponents by the greatest. It was the greatest margin in the history of the sport.
Awesome.
And we didn't have that. Was Randy Moss in his prime? Tom Brady's in his prime. Their defense was loaded and sick, and they just blew people out of the water. They lost one game with David Tyree catching the ball against his helmet, and the NASCAR pass rush, which really seemed to rattle Tom Brady. But we didn't get a part two because he got hurt the next year. Look, I think Wes Welker's the best of the slot wide receivers. I think Randy Moss is the best of the outside the numbers wide receivers. And I think that Rob Gronkowski has been the greatest tight end they've ever had. I agree with you in terms of Tony Gonzalez as a pass catcher, but it's one of those things that we don't talk enough about because there's not highlights of great blocking tight ends. No one says, like, you know what he does? He blocks well. It's like great women. We don't talk about their personality nearly enough, even though
I do.
Well, even though in the reality of it, if you can't have a conversation with a woman.
You're doing so well.
If you can't, but this is true. If you can't have a conversation with a woman, what's the point of her beauty? What's the point of her beauty? It's the same thing with Gronk. What separates him is his ability to block.
On that note, we're going to go to break. Well, Gronk
you just
play
can't
next
lead with the personality.
Year,
you got a great personality.
Where in the world will Antonio Brown play? That's ahead.
Sweating over
on
here.
First
dying.
You're
like
not
comedian
the only
dying.
One. Welcome back to First Things First. Yahoo senior NBA writer Vincent Goodwill joins the show. We got to be careful of these two, Vincent.
Well, we're talking about spades.
I know.
He learned how to play spades from his black basketball friends, right?
Yeah.
So, okay.
To America.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Are you good at spades?
Not
Vince?
Good with spades and non-spades America.
All right. Meanwhile, let's talk about Russell Westbrook. While many of his fellow NBA superstars are contemplating joining forces next season, Westbrook will not be pushing to be part of a super team. He says super teams are, quote, not my style. I like to compete. I like to go against the best. Vince, what will Russell Westbrook's legacy be, assuming that he does not win a title?
Well, I don't think he's going to win a title. I think he's going to be viewed as one of those talented guys who probably couldn't conform into the way that the game was being played. Like, there's a saying that I had in the 2016 playoffs when Oklahoma City was challenging Golden State. Can't trust Russ. Because late in the game, I looked at game six when Klay went off.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He was guarding Klay when Klay went off. And then in the last 2 minutes, they couldn't get a shot off. That is directly attributed to your point guard and the type of structure and order that you have. And although I was not a huge fan of Billy Donovan, I think you could spread a lot of that blame
KD
around.
KD, too, wasn't lighting
KD
up.
Was terrible.
Yeah,
that game.
But point guard is a position of order. And you can have wild players in virtually every other spot except for point guard because it's so much order that the team sort of rallies around that particular position. And unless there's another player who can sort of take minutes off of him at that point guard spot as his career sort of, you know, starts to deteriorate a little bit. You can see it now physically. He's not the same player that he was maybe a couple years ago. I just don't see Russ being that guy that can be stable enough to lead a team to a championship.
Yeah, he's improved a lot in those areas, but you're right. I mean, that's always been his thing. Now you view him as a point guard, but he's really not a point guard. He's just a tremendous athlete. You know, he's not a guy that's running the offense the right way necessarily. He's gotten better. Like, now he's not making what I'll call, like, Allen Iverson assists, where you're going to try to score and you can't, so you kick it out to your open teammate and they make a bucket. Now he is looking for guys this year. And that's why, you know, Dennis Schroeder, Steven Adams, Paul George, Jeremy Grant, they're all having career years. A lot of that's Russ, but he still has a ways to go in that regard. As far as his legacy, look, I agree with you. I don't think he'll win a championship. He's going to be an icon. He's going to be iconic. 25 years from now, 30, 40 years from now, people are going to be like, Russell Westbrook averaged a triple-double for three straight years. And it maybe it'll be four or five. Who knows? But think of Oscar Robertson. Now, he was obviously a better all-around player, better player than Russ. But we don't think of Oscar Robertson and the one championship he won with Lew Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in Milwaukee. Whenever we talk about Oscar Robertson, it's he averaged a triple-double for his whole career, for a season. And that's what we'll say about Russ. I mean, nobody thought this could be done. Not Hubie Brown, not Jerry West, not the greatest basketball minds, not LeBron. None of them thought it was possible in today's NBA to average a triple-double, and he's doing it for three straight years. So you're right, he's got flaws, but he's going to be an icon because of that triple-double.
All right, there's a bunch to unpack there. Okay, first thing is, you're right. You guys are both right. He's not really a point guard, And maybe the best move of the offseason, which got the least discussion, was acquiring Dennis Schroeder, who's not a truly a starting point guard for a playoff caliber team, right? Like, he was the point guard for one of the worst teams in the NBA. But if he can move Russ off the basketball in parts of the fourth quarter, which is what James Harden was able to do. Mm-hmm. People forget James Harden was their fourth quarter point guard when they went to the NBA Finals. Yep. And that allows Russ to be Russ. Let me first disagree with you in terms of triple-double. Does it look great historically? Absolutely. But we should also point out that the possessions are at an all-time high.
Not all-time.
Well, for modern, I was going to...
Right.
For modern basketball.
When Oscar averaged it, the possessions were way more.
Then why isn't anyone else doing it?
Right.
Because...
Nobody else is going for it. Nobody else.
They're 72-20 when he has a triple-double. To put that in, that's a 64-win pace.
No,
third in the Western Conference.
They win more when he gets a triple-double.
They're a really good team. They're the second-best team in the West, and people were naysayers about them because last year, Paul George knew himself. He knew, like, hey, I just need another year here to kind of feel more comfortable. He's another year away from the injury as well. And I think Russ has been a big part. He's playing off the ball a little bit more. His usage rate is down. I think he's helped Paul George. I do think he's been cool with the hockey. Been cool with the hockey assist, whereas he used to do more of the LeBron thing, which is like, I like when you score, but I want to be the guy who leads to you scoring. But, like, let's be honest, that the volume of shots coming from both ends, the fact that now that he's a guard that rebounds, you don't really have to rebound. Maybe a little bit more so than he used to because you're playing five-out basketball. But really, it's the loading up on the rebound stats that are the reason that he has the triple-double. He was – and other guys, I think
– Like Sarah said, why isn't anybody else doing it?
You cannot tell me there's not another player that wouldn't be doing it if they could.
I think you'll see Giannis get there. I think you'll see...
Triple-double?
Yes, I think you'll see...
He's only had about six assists a game.
I understand. I think you'll see it more and more as people the threat of him if he improves as a jump shooter.
Do you think Giannis will end up being one of the best players in the game?
Yeah, I think he's Giannis is potentially an MVP. Like, look, I think Russell Westbrook's really good.
But you're comparing him to a player that you think is at that caliber.
Here's what's crazy about it. How has he lost his jump shot? Right? Like,
usually, foul shooting.
Yes, but usually as your legs start to go and he's not he was the best. I think he was the best athlete in all of sports, like in terms of all around speed, strength, power and agility and doing all this stuff with a basketball. You go back 3 or 4 years ago. There's nobody in any sport that was more of a freak than that guy. Like, he just wired differently than everybody. But usually as that athleticism goes, now your jump shot has better rhythm.
Right.
And he's shooting 24% from three. His free throw shooting over 2 years is down 20%. Look, I'm a guy who lost it mentally at the free throw line. I can tell you it's really, really hard to get it back. And that changes how much he attacks the rim. And he's never really been a great finisher in spite of his incredible athletic gifts. But that's the weird thing about Russ, which is where he should be more comfortable than he's ever been because he has another guy who can carry the team. He has another point guard who can manage the team. They finally found a small ball lineup that can spread people out, which they couldn't do previously. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden he's lost his shooting, which is a really weird thing.
It is a weird thing. And, Chris, I'm going to say something that you're probably not going to like, that I think the triple-double is overrated. It's just a number.
Yes.
It's just ten is just a number. What's the difference between 28-9-9 and 28-10-10?
I give you that.
You know what I'm saying?
Because like, if Westbrook, and I'm a voter for the
and MVP. I didn't vote for him for MVP the year that he won it.
I would not have voted for him. And so this is going to support your point. If he had averaged like 9.7 assists or 9.8, you know, it was the triple-double. But everything is just the number. I mean, 20 points a game versus 19 points. We always talk about 20 and 10. Five players only averaging 20 and 10 or whatever it is. What's the difference between 10 and 9?
You never gave somebody an MVP based off of that.
That's another thing. Nobody's done it except Oscar Robertson. And like you said, possessions, when Oscar did it, possessions were way more. Defense wasn't as strong. Shooting percentages were lower. So there were many more rebounds available. Russ, I'll give you that with the three-point shots. They're a lot more longer rebounds.
Harden with the 30-point streak as
right.
well. The volume of three-point
right.
shots.
And Harden gets a lot of rebounds, too. So I'll give you that. But LeBron benefits just as much. Like Sarah said, nobody else is doing it. And you can't tell me that a guy can score a lot of points. He can average 30-something points a game and hurt his team. You can't get a triple-double and hurt your team unless you're just shooting too much. He's getting a lot of rebounds.
I disagree.
Getting rebounds and assists does – how does rebounds and assists hurt your team?
If you're a point guard, I don't want you rebounding. I want you
Why
getting
–
because I want you getting the second pass.
Most of the best rebounding point guards – who are the best rebounding point guards in history?
It's Jason
Russell
Kidd.
Russell Westbrook, Jason Kidd,
Magic Johnson.
They all win.
They also all advance past the basketball. Lonzo Ball is that way. Here's maybe a
and Lonzo's a good rebounder.
I think it's a little overrated. I think part of it is we're still caught in the old school stat era, right? In the media, we're still points, rebounds, right. assists. Where that's not how they
stats.
Look at it, which is a lot like baseball. Baseball, like. RBI don't really matter that much. They just don't. RBI is more about who gets on base. It's more about what you do with runners in scoring position. It's more about your war, right? Whereas in basketball, it's more about your points per possession, your plus minus, your efficiency rating on offense and defense. And you're still judging today based upon the stats of yesteryear. Whereas within basketball circles, which we're all part of, it's more about your efficiency at both ends, and he can be a wildly inefficient player in spite of the fact that his traditional stats are outstanding.
He's impacting wins. He's impacting wins.
Right.
He's a great player.
No matter which group of stats you want to use, at the end of the day, it's about wins. 72-20, Vince.
Vince, we're going to bring
you
back a little bit later in the show.
72-20.
Seriously?
Coming up,
are
the Steelers in trouble?
You related to Rob.
Don't say it. As good as gone. That's next on First Things First. And we're back here on First Things First with Vincent Goodwill. Big matchup in college basketball. Number 8 UNC against number 1 Duke. The ticket prices to this game are nearing Super Bowl levels, due in large part to Zion Williamson. Zion is the overwhelming favorite to be drafted first overall. Vince, will Zion live up to the hype?
Is it impossible for him not to live up to hype? Because I think... Or impossible to live up to the hype, because I feel like the machine is so large and so overwhelming. Like, if you compare it to LeBron in 2002 when he was in high school, you only saw a couple of his games. And a lot of it was urban legend, the SI story, all of that type of stuff. Now you have social media. He's playing at Duke. Like, you see so much of him, and you're extrapolating. You're just saying, okay, when he gets to the league, he's going to be a combination of LeBron and Sean Kemp and all these other things. And you're like, wait a minute. Let's slow this down for a second. He is a man amongst boys, but he's amongst boys. When he goes to the league, he's going to be a young man amongst grown men, and I do think it's going to take an adjustment period for him. Is he a franchise changer? Yes. But, Chris, I think I heard someone, I think it might have been Scottie Pippen, said he's the greatest prospect since Michael Jordan. That's a lot of pressure to put on a 19-year-old with some of the great players that have come into the league in the past 30 years or so.
Yeah, Scotty said said some crazy things lately, that being one of them. Look, I don't think he's more of a prospect or as much of a prospect as LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and obviously because of technology, he's gotten more hype. But LeBron obviously was hype. One of the great things about LeBron is he lived up to it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's hard to do. Great. So many guys don't live up to hype. And so many of the guys that have become all-time greats, like Kobe, for instance, he was hyped, but not to this degree or not to LeBron's degree. So that is a challenge. But I do think he'll live up to the hype and be a great player in the NBA, be a superstar. One, obviously, he's explosive. And in the NBA now more than ever, because the floor is so spread, it's easier to get to the rim, I think, than it's ever been.
Correct.
And so with his, even though he's short, what, 6'6", 6'5", 6'6", with his explosiveness and his size, his body, he can finish, I think, over much bigger players.
Well, he's going to be going against guys where he's more developed now, and he's going to physically mature over the next couple of years. So I don't anticipate it being like a tough transition. Right. It's just going to be a transition. But I do think he's a franchise changer. I think if you draft him, he's going to change your life.
No question about it. All right, let's first get to the Scottie Pippen thing. It's one of the more uneducated comments that he's made. Okay, first, Michael Jordan wasn't
one of them.
In terms of prospects, like, look, I think Jordan's the greatest player I've ever seen. Okay, so I start at that point. It should be pointed out that Michael Jordan was not the number one or even number two draft pick in his draft class.
And he wasn't a huge prospect.
I understand. That's in terms of trying to contextualize. That's why I think Scottie Pippen's a smart guy. I think he wants to give Jordan a ton of love. Find a way to mention Michael Jordan in every sentence possible.
Because he once said that LeBron was better.
Right. So
he's been making up for that for his entire decade.
Over and over.
But I came out in 95, and it was an unbelievable high school class. And it was Paul Pierce, who he was my roommate at ABCD, and he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and Chauncey Billups, and Sharif Abdul-Rahim, and Vince Carter, and Stephon Marbury. And I never forget, I played in what was now the Jordan Brand class. It used to be the Magic's Round Ball Classic in Detroit, Michigan.
Detroit, yep.
Right? And the week of practice, it was good, and there was some guys were, one guy was the best player one day, one guy was the best player the next day, and KG wasn't there. And then the day of the game, or day, night before the game, KG showed up because he took the SAT on a Saturday trying to play in college. And then he showed up the day of the game. And I'm telling you, from the moment they threw that ball up, it wasn't any question who the best player in high school basketball was that year was Kevin Garnett. And that's what, and this guy's a little bit like that. Remember, they both grew up in South Carolina. That's where KG played his last year in Chicago. So the idea, we've seen guys like this before, whether it's LeBron, whether it's Kevin Garnett, whether it's Kobe Bryant. There was a ton of hype around Kobe Bryant. We've seen what's impressive about Zion to me is on a couple levels. First, the fact that they're not simply giving him the ball and telling him to go win a game. It's really R.J. Barrett dominates the basketball. And he's able to sacrifice his ego. And he also plays both ends. He's getting better. He's played his best in his biggest games. The St. John's game was a big game at the time, 29. Remember when they played Syracuse, they were down two starters, right? They lost at home to Syracuse. They're down two starters against the zone, which should be his kryptonite. He had 35 and 10. I mean, even in the comeback against Louisville last week, he had 27 and 12. He had four fouls for almost three quarters of the second half, and he still dominated that game. And that's not even talking about his defense and his shot blocking. In terms of what he'll be in the NBA, I think he'll be great as long as you understand who he is and what he's about. He's not LeBron. He's not James Harden. He's not Giannis. Okay, he's got a little Barkley to him, got a little Blake Griffin to him, and he's got a little Draymond Green to him in that he's a small ball five and a big ball four. Now, he can step out. He can handle the ball. He's a little bit better shooter than he was last year, but he needs to improve that part of his game. But he can score in the post. He's an absolute man physically. He's actually going to have to lose weight, not gain weight, to play against NBA men because of the pounding on his hips. But as long as you understand that he's not a point forward, he's a power forward center who can handle the basketball and face up a little bit.
Does he have vision? Can he pat?
He can. He's not Draymond. But also remember, when Draymond was in college, Draymond wasn't Draymond as a passer.
But you could see Draymond had that. I thought
he had the gene.
But like if you put the athleticism of a Barkley, this guy's only 6'5 and a half, 6'6. I think he measured out 6'5 and three quarters in bare feet. That's like 6'6 and a half, which 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you're like, man, too small, got to be a three.
Right.
He's not a three. He's a 4-5 and a really good one at that. As long as you understand that, he will live up to the hype, and he's played at his best in the biggest of games so far for Duke.
Well, you got to think about it. He's going to be the top pick or second, whatever.
Probably
one or two. So that means he's going to go to either maybe New York or Cleveland or Chicago or Phoenix, and all they have is room and young players basically to throw the ball and say, figure it out. I'm not sure if he needs that type of structure. It's going to come down to what situation he's placed in, because he's such a unique player without a given position in today's game. I think the passing part is going to open up, because in college, the floor is so compressed.
Yeah.
And coaches control so much of the game itself, it doesn't lend to a lot of creativity. When the NBA, it's spread out. You can't touch anybody. The game is quicker. It's more possessions. The only thing that's going to hinder him is his lack of being able to get up a quick shot. But other than that, I think he's going to be fine. I don't know if he's going to affect winning early on, but I do think he's going to be a productive player from the moment he steps on the floor.
Well, you know, like, when you're young, nobody's going to be looking at his wins and losses unless he just comes in and makes a team win. You know, there's that honeymoon period, Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis, where it's like you want to establish – Kyrie Irving. As long as you establish yourself individually as a superstar – that's what they're looking at those first 4 years.
I disagree, because they expected LeBron to win from day one.
And he didn't make the playoffs the first 2 years.
But
nobody held it against him.
They didn't hold it against him, but they expected him to.
No, I don't think so. Carmelo actually won, turned Denver into a winner and made the playoffs.
You think if
Larry Bird took the Celtics from like 20 wins to 60
right.
wins, or 59 wins, whatever, but people forget that.
And people were coming in earlier or later. Bird was a man when he came.
He redshirted when he transferred.
And they also had older, but still Hall of Famers on that team. Tiny Archibald.
I think it depends on what team. Like, if he comes to the Knicks and they got Kyrie or Kemba and they got one of the bigs that they want to get, I do think they'll win a bunch. Like, look, I like how he'll play early on in his career, because he doesn't have to change how he's playing at Duke. Right? He's a blend player now.
He doesn't need to dominate the ball.
No.
Which is great.
No, because all these other guys, they've been dribbling around cones for years, right? Yep. So they're just used to coming down. R.J. Barrett, dominating the ball, high usage rating, creating shots for others or for themselves. That's not how he plays. I think the most refreshing part about it is how hard he plays on defense. And look, the big thing, I know that fans have been trained to think, well, the defense doesn't matter. I'm telling you, if you have a power forward who can guard centers and can switch onto ball screens and can move laterally like he can, it's an invaluable weapon.
Don't believe me,
Draymond Green, who couldn't score 10 points if you locked him in the gym all by himself, might get a max contract this year. Why? Because he can guard the five, he can guard the one, and he can make life hell for whoever he plays defense on. It's that important in basketball, and this guy's a much better offensive player with a limitless ceiling.
To what you said quickly, he's got the tangibles, obviously, and the intangibles. That's what you like about him.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.